butt and your brain, you're in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Nerds Domain Podcast. I'm Matt, and this week I'm here with Ed.
Hi there.
And Johnny Brown.
Hello.
And we are doing an immediate movie review of a 40-year-old movie, right?
Caution, yeah. There may be spoilers ahead.
Yeah. So this is, we are doing a review of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Today, they re-released it for its 40th anniversary. Ed and I just got done seeing it at AMC Castleton in a fantastic theater.
We were all reclined.
It
was luxurious.
It was
fabulous.
And some of our party were drinking booze. It was fantastic.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Who was drinking booze and why weren't they sharing with me?
Shirley's sister was drinking booze because you just had to go out to MacGuffin's.
Oh my gosh.
Right? We did kind of rush in there.
Fair enough.
And Johnny, you have seen this movie?
I have.
Before? Are you sure?
Yeah, I've seen it quite a few times.
You were going to make the movie, and then suddenly we weren't bored.
You know what? Listen. I've seen it on the big screen. I saw it in IMAX. Thank you.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
Wow, the pores on their noses would just be enormous.
Right? It was, and it was a little annoying. It was annoying, but
hell, the pores in the film would be enormous.
Right. We saw Dunkirk in IMAX a couple weeks ago. Have you seen Dunkirk?
I can't bring myself. I saw the trailer. That was enough.
It's you know when you're driving in a car with a crazy person and they're like, "I will kill us all. I will kill us all," and they start like jerking the car back and forth.
Yeah,
it was like so 2.5 hours of that.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm all about that. Wow.
So it was a good movie, like really well done. But holy cow, was Dunkirk intense? And I mean, like, holy cow.
See, I felt that way about Saving Private Ryan. After I saw that movie when it first came out, what was that, 1998? Mm-hmm. It was like,
yeah.
I was like, I never need to see this movie again. But now, yeah, maybe I've just become desensitized to it because I play violent video games or whatever. But I whenever it's on, I'm like, well, I know what I'm doing for the next 2 hours.
Well, and we watched that. We had to get special permission, but we watched that my senior year of high school.
Oh, that's right. You're a youngin'. I forgot.
But just the intro. And they shut it down, and that the idea was to show us what that part of the war was like, and holy cow.
Yeah.
It's like Dunkirk is like that for like 2 hours. I mean, it is,
wow.
It is phenomenal, but I will never watch it again.
So short on dialogue, long on blood.
There's some dialogue in it, but it's not even long on blood. It's long on intensity. It's just one thing. And Cillian Murphy, who I like, plays a crazy person really well. Plays someone that's shell-shocked very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking back to seeing him in Batman.
Yeah.
He does play good
nutzos.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you know, now we're equating, you know, being a psychotic with being freaked out about the things you just saw, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Johnny is
different.
Uncharacteristically quiet.
Well, no, because I was listening, and I haven't seen Dunkirk. I don't know if I'm going to see Dunkirk.
That's fair.
I saw the trailer, and I was like, that's good enough.
No.
I did see Saving Private Ryan, but for me, the movie that did that was Platoon as a kid growing up, seeing that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for two reasons. One, because a little sidebar, my cousin was in the movie.
Oh.
He was the black dude that was nailed by the throat to the tree in the jungle.
I've not seen Platoon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
it's
him.
Been a while.
Yeah,
it's
Corky
while,
Ford. But that's him. Shout out to my cousin. I was like, wow. All right. Like, yeah. But two, no, like it was one of those movies that was really intense, and like you saw war in a way that stylized in a way that seemed very realistic, and there was a lot of quiet moments in that movie, and just really, in it wasn't so much the violence or, like you said, the gore or anything like that. It was just the intensity and the very sparseness of like dialogue, and so you really felt like, you know, what it'd be to move through a jungle and foreign lands,
right?
And, you know, to be like entrenched in war, and so it jacked me up, man. So
yeah,
I'm cool. I'm
now
good.
Now that we've talked about war movies.
Yeah. Let's talk about some space invading type things.
Yeah, now that we completely diverted from the topic.
We did.
I thought this was the Close Encounters podcast.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So just off the top of your head, do you guys know how long ago it was that you first saw Close Encounters?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How long ago did you see it? Or like the first time?
Yeah.
And I'm not looking for exact dates.
No.
But like,
it was probably like early, probably about mid-80s, like 84, 85 for me, roughly somewhere in there.
Yeah. Okay. Same. Early 80s. I was three when this movie came out. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a gleam in my dad's eye.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was probably a little intense for a three-year-old, but much more likely that I saw it once we got cable when I was in first, second grade.
So, yeah, and that's, because when it came out, when I saw it, because it came out in 77, I saw it around, 84, 85, so I was, about the same, 4 or 5 years old when I finally got to see it on cable, and, that was, one of those things. It was like, oh, wow, alien movie, and it was like, ooh, and, the special effects for the time that really caught my attention, but, a lot of the themes, obviously, and things like that kind of went over my head, and obviously I had an obsession with Terry Garr, so.
This was my first.
Me too.
Right.
She looks good.
Right.
This was my first viewing.
Okay.
Ever. Surely it was her first viewing as well, but she is exhausted and not really up for podcasting tonight since.
Yeah, we miss you, Shirley. We love you.
Yeah.
Shout out to
We do
Shirley.
Miss her.
I don't miss you, Shirley.
That's a lie. That's
such a
lie.
Jerk. Oh, Ed. crazy guy.
It was definitely something that I've been meaning to see for a while. For probably the last 4 or 5 years, I've been thinking, I should see this. But it's never streaming anywhere, so it makes it a little bit...
Yeah.
I don't want to pay to rent a movie that I may or may not like. And now I paid to go see it in a theater, and it was way more than that. But that's not really the point.
You know what's funny? With cable, we pay every month for a bunch of stuff we know we're going to hate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we have no problem with that. But it's $3 for a movie that everybody says is good. You're like, I don't know.
That's why I don't have cable.
Well, my thing is science fiction is always so tricky because there's always those films that are very, very much B quality that are always going to end up kind of in that cult arena type thing just know are going to be bad. But then there's always that stuff that you look at that come from certain directors like Spielberg, things like that.
I have a theory about that.
That you just kind of it's coming from a good director. They have good credibility.
I like their other work.
Yeah. More than, what's the odd that it's going to be bad? And then, sometimes you get burned. And so.
So
I'm looking at you, Shyamalan.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
We ain't got time for that.
Boy.
Can you tell I'm the new guy around here?
So I have a theory. So superhero movies have a thing where superhero movies are not good when they're superhero movies. They're good when they are another type of movie that has superheroes in it.
Mm-hmm.
So Winter Soldier was a spy thriller. Also, there was Captain America.
Right.
And they work really well when they're those things.
Yeah.
Science fiction, I think, follows the same rule. Alien is not a super, is not a sci-fi movie. Mm-mm. It is a horror movie with a sci-fi setting.
Yeah.
And Aliens is not a horror movie, or is not a sci-fi movie. It's a army movie in an alien setting.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Independence Day, which you can say a lot of things about Independence Day. It was enjoyable and it was good. Because it's a war movie set in a sci-fi setting.
Yeah.
And I think that in this instance, we see a psychological thriller set with scary, weird things that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens to be that it's very much sci-fi, a little bit of horror, although some of us realized it's a lot more horror for them towards the end. Me. This movie was, I think it more than held up. And I was very impressed by the movie. Some of the special effects were a little iffy.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're looking at them on such grainy film.
Right.
Because
this was not updated.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was updated. I mean, if we saw the originals, we probably wouldn't even recognize them. But but still, I mean, it's retained a lot of that that aesthetic quality of older film.
And also, too, in the modern day, we've gotten spoiled by all the special effects that we now have access to and the Photoshop, the digitizing, things like that. So when I go back and look at films that I would say that are circa 2000 and down, I have to kind of always go in with the lens of I'm not always necessarily looking at the aesthetics of the film. I'm looking more for the quality, the content, and other aspects of it, and not just the visual. Because for me, I'm always the visuals, honestly, I'm always impressed by them. I'm still impressed by because I still have the before Lucas put his hands on them, the not remastered special 9000th time editions of Star Wars, and to see those films, knowing the history of how they were made and what they did for the special effects, things like that, it's it to me, it's still groundbreaking. It's like, wow, you were able to make that noise by taking a trash can and
right.
and like you were picking your teeth and what? You got a laser gun sound? Like, that's awesome. So, you know, it's things like that that I appreciate.
You're also going to find movies that don't apply to that, that are exceptions to that rule. Like right. Jurassic Park. If you go back and look at yeah. Jurassic Park, it is a fine film and the effects, the practical effects are amazing. Mm-hmm. Whereas like some other stuff that was shot in the early 90s are it is questionable at best with what were they even thinking.
Yeah.
But they were quote unquote groundbreaking yeah. at the time. So.
Sure. Yeah, well, so when you think about, you know, Star Wars and Close Encounters both came out in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Lucas was really doing this cutting edge stuff with the cells and, you know, paint, you know, on top yeah. of the mats
yeah.
and everything to achieve those, the ships, the X-Wings flying around. But you could still see that little bubble. And I kind of feel like maybe what Spielberg was doing here was using those lights to sort of
offset it,
offset everything, to yeah. mask everything. I mean, it in a lot of ways, by shining all that extra light on everything, you actually made the darkness, you know, the ship that you couldn't see
right.
that much scarier.
Well, and we don't see a full ship until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
This is
yeah, it's just fast moving lights.
Well, and
yeah.
fast moving lights
shape.
Or when they come down, you can see the lights and sort of an outline of the ship, or they're yeah. flipping over, but you don't see the ship. Right. You see an outline or a dark spot or something.
Right.
So to go over the movie just real quick, something weird is going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of established pretty early on that some weird stuff's going on. Some planes show up in the desert. Some planes from the 40s show up in the desert. Look brand new.
Yeah.
There's an investigation going on. We're introduced to a bunch of characters kind of all at once without really being introduced to them.
Right.
Spielberg does a thing where he doesn't introduce you to anybody. He expects you to just see them in the story for who they are.
Right.
And he does that really well. And I think this is a great example of that, too. And then we kind of pop around, and a lot of the movie is set here in Indiana, which was weird because I don't know of any foothills in Muncie, but no, let me
so
tell
it
you.
It was filmed in Wyoming.
right.
It was filmed in Wyoming, parts of California, Nevada. So, like, yeah, it was.
And
it
India.
Was, yeah. yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So we get to see the character, this regular guy, Roy. Roy?
Mm-hmm.
Roy. Okay, Roy. We get to see this regular guy who happens to work for the power company, and his forced fascination with this situation. I really feel like he was abducted from that stop, for that first step. He had no choice but to go forward.
Yeah.
And we get to watch him kind of go, not kind of, really go crazy. I mean, really.
Well, it's
batshit crazy.
I don't think it's so much that he goes crazy. And frankly, I think that this is sort of related to a theme in the film. He's wrestling with this thing that very few people understand.
Right.
The people who do understand what he's coming from, you know, are 100% supportive, you know, 100%, you know, curious about it. And it really removes him and, you know, all of these other people who've had these experiences from their families. It becomes this driving force for them.
Right.
And they don't understand what's happening to them. They don't understand what they've seen. They don't understand what's happening to them. They don't. And all they want to do is get some answers.
Right.
All Roy wants to do is get some answers.
Yeah.
The way his wife responds to it, the way his, you know, the way the neighbors respond to this,
yeah.
rather than saying, hey man, something weird happened to you, you know, let's figure it out. It's instead, let's just pretend it never happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reaction of the community is harsh. I mean, just they look at him like he's a nut job, like him and the other people that were out there were nut jobs.
Well, yeah, it's right. basically the typical like, oh, well, you know, you're crazy. And like, you know, it didn't exist. It didn't happen. You're crazy.
Yeah.
Like there's no way. And so it's kind of like I almost felt like they tried to make Roy and the others feel like they were indeed going insane. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
right,
that they
yeah.
and that they were indeed crazy. And so there were at points where you could tell where Roy and I forget Melinda Dillon's character's name.
Jillian.
Thank you, Jillian. Where, you know, it was almost like sometimes the dialogue between them, or like the things that they would put out there, was almost like they were kind of questioning their own sanity at certain points, even though they were very firm in their belief of what they experienced. And so that was I always found that to be very interesting about the story. And that and I agree with you, Ed, like they their families weren't supportive and the communities weren't supportive. And it was very much this, oh, like, oh, it didn't happen, it didn't exist, so on and so forth. But there were too many variables and too many things that constantly left unanswered, and that there were no logical explanations to.
Right. Well, I mean, like, you know, how they were all drawn to that same shape, how they were. I mean, just for one thing, if I come home half burned on one side of my body, my wife is going to want to know what happened.
Right.
My wife is going to say, I've got some questions. There's going to be an investigation on my wife's part to figure out how I got well done on one side, why I'm now two-faced.
Right.
You know, especially when she saw me, you know, at night a few hours earlier, and my skin, and I was perfectly normal. Now yeah. I come back at 4 o'clock in the morning and I got half a sunburn. No.
Yeah.
She's going to have some questions that need to be answered. I never quite understood why Terry Garr was just like, oh, that's nuts. So anyway, what's for breakfast?
Yeah. There's some time passing in this movie that is not clear.
Yeah.
Because right. by the time we get to the end, all the burns have healed, which I don't know about you guys, but it takes me at least 3 or 4 days. Plus, the dude went from Indiana to Wyoming. I'm assuming he flew, and there's some hints there, because he had a Wyoming plate, so I assume he flew and rented a car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was the thing I saw. But even then, like, flying to Wyoming in the 70s is not, well, where do you fly to in Wyoming other than Cheyenne? So we're looking at multiple days, if
actually,
not
he probably
weeks.
Flew into Denver.
Not if we had Wyoming rental. That was the only thing I could think.
My friend got a rental car with a Florida plate.
That's true.
She lives around the corner.
That's true. So. Anyway, so, man, look at you using logic. Get out of here.
Okay, bye. So, it's been nice.
I mean, we get to see this progression, but we are not given a solid time frame, which I think is done on purpose, and I don't have a problem with, but it is definitely.
Sure. But, I mean, there's no doubt when he comes home that first night after the first encounter.
That first night is very clear what the time frame is, and then from there until when he starts throwing plants in the window. And this is not a joke. Like, that's not a euphemism for anything. He starts throwing plants in the window.
You really like to throw some plants in the window, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know, right?
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
There has been some time, and it was. I feel like it was hinted at that it had been weeks from that first encounter until that moment.
Yeah, that I always kind of got the impression that was a few months. Johnny, I'm looking over at you, and I'm like, wow, you're like, oh, I want to say something. I'm sorry. Please,
no, you're
take
fine.
It away, bro.
Yeah, like when you watch it, it definitely isn't after the first encounter. It's very, to me, it's always, every time that I've seen it, and I've seen it 4 times roughly.
Right.
It has always been, to me at least, very clear that the timeline after the first encounter is not linear at all.
Right.
And so what you see is this kind of, and I think that, like you said, I think it was done on purpose. I think it was also kind of done as a way to show kind of the erraticness one feels when they feel isolated in such an encounter, when you go through something that like other people don't really like experience. Because I there's been certain things that like I've experienced, that, you know, nothing like an encounter or anything like that,
right.
but you know, just other kind of things.
No, it's okay, Johnny, you're among friends.
Yeah. Right.
You can tell.
Now's the time to tell.
Yeah. Not an alien encounter, you know, but you know, certain things that were like the time gets kind of away from you, you know, particularly like when you're dealing with like traumatic things like death and so
right,
on and so
right.
forth. And so like time gets away from you, you kind of, you know, there's certain things about like either one of my parents' passings that like I can tell you certain things about it, but not specifics, because the timeline gets very muddled very quickly after point A and point Z, and everything
right.
in between is kind of muddled. And I think that Spielberg really did that on purpose to kind of show that discombobulation and that very much psychological toll and scar that it takes when you very much are aware of your truth and are aware of the fact that what you've experienced is very real and no one else believes you, or the few people that believe you are also admonished as well, because no one believes you as a collective.
Yeah, and well, and I think the other thing is that this is a very tight movie from start to finish.
It
any is. Time that he slows down, it's for a very specific purpose, and Spielberg cuts out anything that would not be necessary.
Right.
And we still clock in at 2:17.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a short movie.
Yeah, I can only imagine what the rough draft was. Like, right? When they went into the editing room, it was like, all right, we've got 27 hours. Let's condense this bad boy down to two.
Yeah.
Come on with it.
So we get to see Roy kind of go crazier, or kind of go through a process of dealing with whatever's going on with him. He starts building this stone mountain thing.
Yeah.
And then,
well, he starts with shaving cream.
Yeah.
Then he works up to mashed potatoes.
Which, oh, so the mashed potatoes made me, this movie made me appreciate several other things. Canadian bacon, the movie.
Okay.
Because Rhea Perlman at one point is building the tower that's in Ottawa. It's in Ottawa. And she's like, it's about of mashed potatoes. And she's like, this means something. This is important. And I'm like, oh, so Canadian bacon is even better than I thought.
Sure, yeah.
I love nice Canadian bacon. Nice it's ridiculous. Wow. But then it's also made me really appreciate X-Files even more, because they took a lot here, a lot of this, and just built on it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, just a ton of stuff. Like, I really feel like this was a solid start point for X-Files specifically.
Sure. Well, I mean, this was probably not even definitely a touch point,
right,
or a touchstone for X-Files. But, you know, this, I mean, you can see the evolution of this from when the, you know, the U.S. Air Force was doing all of the tests out at Area 51. Right. I'm not going to say that there aren't aliens out there, but I'm not going with the story that there are.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there were, you know, weird test planes that they were flying, and they were saying, oh, it must have been a UFO, or
Oh,
it was a weather balloon. No, actually, you know, there's all this mystery surrounding all of that, which led to all of these legends and all of these, you know, myths about, you know, little green men, etc.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. This even makes me, mm-hmm. Ed is going to have an opinion here that I disagree with. I really like Signs. Really, really like Signs. The movie.
Okay.
From M. Night.
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry. Wait, did you say Signs?
As in
the one where water was the...
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I liked Signs up until that last scene.
Ignore the last scene.
Okay.
Assume it in some other way.
Well, and the whole fact that the aliens can die from water and they decided to come to a planet that's 70% covered with it.
Okay, so we're still ignoring that last scene.
Okay, we're ignoring that. Okay, the rest of that movie is
build. They reveal once prior to that last scene an actual alien. And it is very effective and freaky as crap.
All I have to say is, what about the trees? I think it's the trees.
Oh, jeez.
It's in the trees.
No.
It's got to be the trees, bro.
So,
oh, my God. This is why we can't have Ed on the show.
So, this movie waits. One, doesn't show us, Close Encounters doesn't show us a spaceship. A full spaceship until the end.
Nope.
No.
They give us what are probably very terrifying lights in the sky. Like, that did not affect me as much as other parts of this movie. But, like, coming to think of it, like, all you're seeing is lights flying through the air.
Yeah.
Lights
in the sky. Lights in the window. Lights under
About
under the vents in the floor.
About a year ago, Shirley and I were driving back from Columbus to here. So it's about an hour. And just as we got outside of the city limits, there was a flash of light in the air, and it seemed to move. Now, between here and Columbus is Atterbury, which is a very active military base, and I just wrote it off as that, but at the moment, it freaked me out, and I can only imagine that one flash in the air freaking me out compared to that's a freaking saucer just, like, literally staring at me with its bright, flashy eyes. And on top of that, the scene where Barry gets taken...
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm. From the farmhouse and there's lights everywhere.
Yeah. And the screws unscrew themselves. And yes. I wish we had not seen that little featurette beforehand.
Because that would have absolutely
When they're coming down the chimney.
Yeah.
I don't want to know how that was shot. I don't want to know.
Sure. Yeah. No, it would have been. Well, but again, so what's the statute of limitations on spoilers?
No, you're good. Go for it. Yeah.
No, but no, that's what I'm saying. Right. What is the statute of limitations?
That's fair.
It's 40 years old. They're kind of figuring, oh, yeah, everybody's seen this by now. No, no, we got a couple of the 10,000 in this studio audience.
The only reason we knew that this was coming out is because I was screwing around on my Apple TV on Apple trailers, and I'm like, what's coming out? Oh, what's Close Encounters? What's that?
Oh, they're remaking it.
That's what I thought, sure. And I'm like, but it's coming out Friday. What's going on here? And that's how we realized it was coming out today.
Yeah.
But like even then, that trailer shows a ton that kind of ruins the progression of the film.
Yeah. That's definitely an end of the DVD featurette.
Right.
Not a, hey, watch this and
but it almost at the same time, like, show you. It's 40 years old. Why hasn't Matt seen it already?
Right. Yeah. Like, the seriously. Statute of limitations kind of ran out in about 1987, I'd say, because there was no real internet at the time.
Yeah.
So you got to give people a little more time. But now that, you know, you roll out an entire season on Netflix in one day.
Right.
You got to, maybe a couple of weeks, but then it's like, sorry, man, you had your chance. You had your chance to see this.
Yeah. So that farmhouse scene is intense. I think it would have been more intense had I not seen that part, because they showed in the little featurette, because you missed it, Johnny, they showed the camera, they called it the halo of fire or the whatever.
Yeah, they got lights all around.
Right. And then showed them dropping it and throwing rocks down the set, which was very effective.
Right.
And I get what they were doing, and I love the part of me is like, oh, that's awesome how they did the practical stuff here. And the other part of me is like, I don't want to know this because I want the movie to freak me out. Like, this is one of those situations where I want to be freaked out a little bit.
Yeah, when she started to reach up to get the damper, I was like, oh, this is that shot. Okay, When
she started reaching up to get it, I was like, and this is when he says, go ahead and grab it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So, I mean, it was very well done.
Right.
The whole scene's freaky. That kid is an idiot, and kid needs some time out. Right. I'm going to tell you now.
That kid is a 40-year-old man now.
Yeah,
so.
Let's be right. He's grown. He's my age. Like, yeah, let's exactly. be clear.
But second, okay, wait a minute. What do you hate about Barry? I mean, he's like a 3-year-old. And
first
he has
and foremost,
no ability to...
how did he get out of that house? Like that? Like, I understand that.
Oh, she's a terrible mother.
But then he's like running around. Like, what child runs like half a mile away in the middle of the night?
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on.
And then this runs away
about
again.
Aliens from outer space who play.
Now this is the part that bothers me.
Aliens play music to us from outer space, but you're wondering how a kid can run half a mile?
Number two, those people on that truck,
he's in the middle of the road.
Out,
nobody sitting at this table could run half a mile. I think.
I could run half a mile.
I think over
the rest of my life, spread out well enough, I could run half a mile.
Oh, my God.
No, seriously, not without an IV and some serious painkillers.
But then all those people are sitting there on the truck waiting for the aliens to show up, and they don't get the little kid out of the rope. Like, what kind of terrible people live in Indiana?
Right. That's actually another podcast.
Yeah. I mean,
that'll take another podcast.
So then Barry knows the aliens are there, knows his mother's freaked out, and he just, I'm going to go through the doggy door. No, kid, what are you doing? Like, why are you opening the front door?
Well, he can't help it because that's just how he was raised.
Well, I answer my own question because I think it goes back to the same thing with Roy. Is there is a predetermination. He has already been abducted. It's just a matter of getting through the steps until he is abducted.
Right.
Because because it's clear from even Barry, who can't do a lot, that he is having that same effect because he's playing it on his xylophone.
Phone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's playing that music.
That chime. Yeah. Yep.
Now, wait a minute. When you say Roy's already been abducted, do you think that when he was parked out by the railroad tracks at the beginning,
when he gets
the sunburn?
Do you believe in fate? Like, you are fated to become the emperor of the universe. It doesn't matter what you do.
Well, whether or not I believe in it, I understand the concept.
I think that the moment that Roy sees the ship in that way, a switch is flipped, and it's only a matter of time between now and when he actually gets on the ship. He is abducted the whole time.
Okay, see, I was misunderstanding what you were saying. I thought you were saying you thought he'd already
I think that they essentially have their hooks in him, and it's just a matter of how long it takes him to pull him over.
In terms of storytelling, absolutely. Fate is always a very big player.
Which I think makes the aliens malicious in what they're doing.
Interesting.
Potentially, because the argument also could be that they're very peaceful in how they're doing it, or at least attempting to be peaceful. Potentially, again, there's not a lot of understanding of what the aliens are doing.
Of what they're doing or what they want or what their motives or anything. Right. It's just a matter of, like, they... Because we have to... we have to look at it through a lens like this. So when you compare it against other alien types of television shows or films, the alien's intent is very clear. Like when you, or even when it's ambiguous, there's something there that makes you go, something isn't right.
Right.
Like for example, when we look at the television series V, right?
Okay.
Which one? The original.
Okay.
The original, the 1980s version, not the remake, although that's another podcast. We'll discuss that later. Okay.
And when we're talking about the 80s version, we are talking about V and V the Final Battle.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, very good. All right. Just so, making sure.
Right.
For the record, yeah, I've seen none of these.
Yeah, the entire...
Oh.
So we need to watch it and talk about that. Oh, that's fine. Gosh, that's fine. We'll get to it later. But it's very clear when the aliens first arrive, there's a character, Juliet Parrish, who is a scientist. And she,
such a crush on her too.
Right?
Yeah.
And my heart broke when she's in the conversion chamber.
Seriously.
That's all I gotta say.
We could do a podcast just called our 80s sci-fi girl crushes.
Right. But she's very almost instantaneously, it's something, you know, like everyone else, like, wow, you know, we're not alone, this, that, and so on and so forth. And she's like, something doesn't sit well. Something isn't right. Something is very off kilter. And then it becomes very quickly what the aliens' motives are. The same thing with Independence Day. Like, it's very much like a, like, oh, like, cool, this, that, and other. And then, boom, they just blow up a whole bunch of people, like, with welcome signs. Like, what? You know,
just like, out there just like signs. In Mars Attacks.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's very...
Very much like in Mars
Attacks. Right, exactly. It's very clear, you know...
Only with
very,
less Martin Short.
Right. It's very clear and precise
a failure.
Right.
Yeah, definitely a crime.
What the aliens' intent is, or it becomes very quickly. However, in Encounters... you're right, because you're kind of left with this ambiguity of like, were they malicious? Are they peaceful? Are they, how are they really, what is their real agenda when it's all said and done? And so that kind of leaves you with that question mark. And to go back to, you guys talking about how the spoiler for you with the trailer and stuff in the scene. Well, since I didn't see that, let me tell you, every time I've seen that scene, it has always been very, intense, and it seems to get more and more intense because I know that it's coming.
Yeah.
I'm aware of how it all shakes out, but it's that thing of what it would be like for me if I am home alone with a child, or just home alone by myself, and all of a sudden, you know, all of this commotion. It's kind of like when a bad storm here happens, like a really good one that like rattles your windows and stuff, and you like wake up and you're like all panic and like you feel like you're in the middle of a car wash. You don't know what's going on. You know,
But if you've gotten to the point where you need to close the damper on the fireplace to keep intruders from coming in, things have gone pretty sideways.
I think something like that, it just goes to the fact that sometimes you just react to things as. Not even just as best as you know, you just kind of react because it's that thing of like, oh, well, if I can put some sort of barrier between myself and this thing, it won't approach. And it's that naivete of like, oh, you know, it's kind of like me trying to put, you know, a barrier between myself and like a sumo wrestler trying to get to the sushi bar. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, you know, he's going to bulldoze me over, but it's that logical yet illogical thought that like, oh, I can close the damper, it's going to stop these aliens from coming. Well, and the reality is that it's not.
It's a desperate move. It's like, I'm going to do anything.
Yeah, well, exactly.
She kicks the rug back over the vent. Like, that's going to stop anything.
Well, she kicks the rug over, but then she does pull the desk on top of it or whatever.
If they can unscrew the screws from the bottom, she ain't got nothing.
Yeah. Desperate.
What they going to do with the desk?
Desperate. You know? She's desperate.
But I think also, too, her desperation shows how she was trying not to believe what was happening.
Right.
You know, it was that denial of like, oh, like it'll go away. I'm just gonna put the rug. Now I'm gonna put the desk. I'm gonna close the damper. I'm gonna do this. I'm afraid of you. I'm gonna throw some
blinds.
Right. It's happening.
Well, and that
it's happening.
That scene that you said gets more intense each time. I feel the same thing. So the part about Signs that really, I'm gonna go back to Signs again. I'm probably gonna do this at least one more, if not two more times. The part of Signs that really grabs me every time is when they reveal the alien in the video of the birthday party. That scene right there.
I will definitely
because
give you that.
Every time I watch that movie, I probably watched it 24 times. I will watch that scene, stop, back up, and watch it again because I'm right there with those characters going, "Holy shit, what was that?" Because it is the most, well, until today, the most terrifying reveal of an alien that I've ever seen. Like that one scene. Because you don't see him until that point, and then it's just some blurry thing through a window down a hall that I'm sitting with a window behind me.
Oh. Right.
Like, this is the kind of thing that gives me nightmares. And I right. like that particular scare and that intensity of that I know and I'm building in my own. Like, that I love that.
Well, that's because you don't expect it. It seems, for me, those type of things, what it is, that it's something very innocuous. And so it's like, oh, it's the scene of a birthday party right, that right. we recorded. And so, you know, it's something that you recorded. So you're visually remembering this experience that you already lived through before. But to see something that is out of sorts that, like, you don't recall, that is very much there and in living color, that's the part I think that jars a lot of people, because right. no one's expecting to see the alien. All of a sudden, you know, there's this alien. And like you said, we've not seen the alien up until that point. They've not been revealed. And so to see it in something that's seems very harmless, very innocuous, this very, you know, mundane thing that we all do, record, you know, curate our lives through video recordings, and to see it right there, like, that freaks you out. To yeah. be, to know that you were in the same space with something or someone and you were unaware of its presence.
Yeah. So eventually, Roy, I'm going to keep going through the telling of this sure. movie. So eventually Roy leaves his family. Or, I'm sorry, his family leaves him.
Wait, yeah. did we cover the part where they're all sitting at, like, the big meeting table oh, in what geez. Looks like the president's mm-hmm. cabinet
yeah.
room?
Right.
I mean, okay, first of all, how did Roy get a seat at this table?
The crazy farmer guy was at that table.
Across from the yeah, farmer guy.
I saw Bigfoot once.
I saw Bigfoot once. Stands up, tells everybody, nobody shuts him up. What's going on with that whole thing?
Which only further cements the community's thought that these people are just crazy.
Exactly.
Which is very effective.
What, so was the crazy old farmer an agent provocateur?
No, I think he was just crazy.
Was he just crazy old farmer?
Yeah. Okay. So that was a weird scene. We see Roy dealing with, I think poorly dealing with this situation.
Right.
His wife,
well, he doesn't
obviously,
have a network there. He doesn't
yeah.
have a support network.
His wife obviously doesn't handle anything. His kids don't handle anything. And it devolves very quickly into chaos.
The kid is screaming at his dad for crying yeah. in the tub.
Yeah.
You know, just calling him crybaby. I'm like, wow, this is awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see Roy's family leave him, and then he builds a giant devil's tower in his living room on
yeah.
his train
yeah.
set.
Yep.
Out of clay and mud and yep. dirt and gravel
and
garbage.
Newspaper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did love him fighting with the garbage man for the trash can. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. So he builds it, and then he realizes that he has to go to Wyoming right. to get there. Meanwhile, Jillian, who is Barry's wife, mother, she heads out to Vegas looking for him, so on and so forth. They both end up in Wyoming. Supposedly, there's a chemical leak or some. Essentially,
yeah,
the military
cover,
gets
the cover story from the military is that there's been a toxic waste spill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody needs to clear out. They kill off some livestock.
Animals, yeah.
To, mm-hmm. you know.
Which I well, found they, was weird because, like, the longer I started to feel a little crazy. Because I'm like, but the aliens are going to be here. And then the livestock, I'm like, yeah, no. The government would be smart enough to kill some livestock, leave it on the road, so it looks like they need to leave. And then there's this guy selling birds as a first response detection thing.
Right.
And
like a canary in a coal mine.
The government yeah. pulls these people over, come out in hazmat suits, get them out of the car. They leave, the birds get left in the car, and then the government agent pulls the birds out of the car, and they're dead. And at that point, I was like, wait, are there aliens in this movie?
I don't know if this is intentional on Spielberg's part, but there is a moment when the agent is reaching into the car to get the pigeons that you can hear like some kind of like a click hiss.
Okay.
I'm thinking that's the moment where he's dosing the pigeons with mm-hmm. some sort of chemical.
You may
agent
be right
to kill
because them. But I didn't hear or notice that, and sure. all I could think was wait a second. Hold on. Did
I'm
miss
on,
something?
I'm on viewing 6 or 7
right,
myself where
yeah.
you are, so it's like you start picking up on those things.
So we see them get kind of taken to the government facility. Roy is questioned by our cartographer, who's also acting as an interpreter, and the Frenchman from the very beginning of the film. And then
Bob Balaban and
Francois.
Francois Truffaut.
Francois Truffaut. He did 400 Blows. Very good French film.
Oh,
check it out. Yeah, he's okay. This is the only film that little historical notes about some of the cast. It's the only film that he ever acted in that he didn't direct. Okay. It's his only English speaking film that he ever done. Everything else is in French. And he was a huge, huge French critic about cinema and cinema verite and things like that. So if you get a chance, like, check out his other work. It's really good. It's really good. But yeah, that's the little cliff note about him.
Excellent.
So we get to see them question Roy, and then Roy and Jillian are put on a helicopter to fly him out. They and another guy get out and head towards the mountain.
Yeah, the CIA Larry? Agent from Daryl. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they head up the mountain.
Did you get that reference? Okay.
Larry falls behind and gets put to sleep. I'm going to go quote unquote put to sleep. I think they murdered him.
Well, see, that's the thing. They're talking about, we're using this gas and it's going to knock him out for 6 hours. And it's the same stuff we were using on the livestock. I'm like, that livestock isn't waking up in 6 hours.
Yeah. And then Larry falls down, or whatever, is Lawrence, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's foaming at the mouth.
Larry. We're going to call him Larry.
Yeah. He's foaming at the mouth. He's dead. Dead.
Yeah.
Like, there's no coming back from this.
Yeah. He did.
So they get up to the top of the mountain. They get up to the top of the crest because they're not on the mountain. I thought they were going all the way up because that would have been cool too. Right. They get around and they see a military complex, and that's when the alien crafts show up.
And I was thinking, when they crawl over that crest, the helicopters are probably told, don't fly above this altitude. You're not allowed on that side of the mountain.
Right.
So once they get there, they're basically home free because the helicopters aren't going to bomb their own people or put their own people to sleep.
Well.
Yeah.
If we've learned anything.
Oh, fair enough.
For
the purposes of this movie, they're not going to do that.
So the scientists have set up communication through both light and sound.
And I'll be damned if I can tell you how those colors correlate to tones or pitches or anything.
They're scientists. I trust them.
Sure. I mean, right. It was very colorful and beautiful, but I still want to find some logic.
Suspension of disbalief. You know, right.
I know. Yeah.
So
That's probably not the hill I want to die on.
They communicate with some of the smaller ships. It goes pretty well. And then the Clear Mothership shows up. And communication is a little rough at first. It smooths out, and then it gets weird, and we don't know what we're saying, but we're just gibbering.
It's rough because the subwoofers on that mothership are banging. Bang.
And then the mothership releases people. The pilots from the 40s, and then a bunch of other people, which was reminiscent of another thing. We're going to talk about influences here in a minute, because I think this movie influences the crap out of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And then
that was Jinx, you owe me Coke. Oh,
and then Barry shows up, and then Mom gets Barry, and then ignores him while taking pictures. She's the worst.
She really is a terrible mother.
She was
mother.
Absolutely the
I
worst.
I just got my baby back. I thought he was dead.
Let's take
a
selfie.
I'm going to snap some selfies.
Right. Yeah, let's take a selfie.
So this was the part of the movie that scared me the most. Because I forgot that I'm afraid of aliens. Like, I have had a very intense fear. No, just stick with me. I've got a story.
I'm with you. I'm making a face, but I'm with you.
I've had an intense fear of a couple of things, and aliens being one of them, since I was a child. But unlike my fear of, I don't know, clowns, my fear...
You're not wrong. Clowns are freaky.
Right.
Shit.
My fear of aliens has always been, like, they're terrifying, but I want to know more about space. I went to space camp. I was very involved with that. I was very happy to go. I wanted to go to space, like, as a career for a while, and then realized I was lazy and fat, so that didn't work out.
So instead, you became
Mars?
A podcaster.
Yeah, or do I want donuts?
I ain't mad at you, Cookie, at all.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been on these podcasts. I'm just saying.
Absolutely not.
So, like, aliens always scare me. So there, I think what I realized while we were talking is there's a giant gap in my nerd card of alien movies, because I skip a lot because I don't want to be scared. This movie will probably give me nightmares.
Okay, so when you say aliens, are you talking about the little grays and the big grays?
Oh, the big gray was freaky as crap, and I'm really glad I saw the strings.
Yes. Wait a minute. But no, but my question is, like, so, like, in Star Trek, are you freaked out by
Klingons?
Nope,
those are fine. Those are fine. I think it's the formless humanoid, but not human-ish.
And also, too, I think it's the presentation, because in Star Trek, in Star Wars and Star Trek, there are universes where, like, there's no, there may be other beings that we haven't encountered yet, but we've encountered a vast array of other
ones. Sure. Like, the Rancor is kind of scary in Star Wars, but it's a Rancor. But, like, the other aliens are essentially known entities. This is an unknown alien entity.
Okay, so it's not their otherness, it's their strangeness.
Yeah, it's the unknown.
Got it. Okay, all right.
So
that makes sense.
I mean, like, the aliens in Independence Day are effective, but a little weird and not as effective. It's like I think Greys themselves, that stereotype freaks me out. Mm-hmm. But that tall one, that thank God it was clearly a marionette, because I would have lost my mind, because then it disappears and all I could think was, where did it go?
Well, yeah, I mean I'm almost like, did you accidentally leave that shot in? Did you? I mean, because everything was fine with all the little Greys toddling around and stuff. I didn't really understand who the long spindly stick alien was.
Terrifying. That's what he was.
I mean, yeah. Besides,
and then he disappears, and all I can think is, where is he at on Earth now?
Where did he disappear to? That's my point.
Where did he go?
It feels like it was a mistake to leave him in there.
And then all the other little Greys come out, which I know are people or little people or children.
Adorable Greys.
In little gray suits, and they keep it dark enough that you can't see the seams and such. And the eyes are a little creepy on those.
The eyes are a little creepy.
It was very effective.
The teeth were kind of, yeah.
The teeth were a little creepy. I feel like you're going to be awake for days now.
No. It's okay. I'll go ahead and go to sleep and have terrors.
Let's get you some tequila.
Hold Shirley tight.
So we see the Greys come out, and then they start choosing people to go back with them, which really they only choose Richard Dreyfuss, Roy.
It's insinuated that the others
go with them, but they come out and specifically choose Roy, and we watch him walk up the very steep incline.
Yeah.
All I could think is he has those stupid booties on his shoes, and he's just going to slip and fall on his face and slide all the way down after he fell down the mountain twice.
Exactly. It's like you can't climb a mountain, and that's got edges.
But you can climb the incline of a spaceship.
The slick mirrored image, you know, the mirrored finish of the spaceship ramp, which, by the way, is there some kind of intergalactic OSHA? Because that shit is not safe. That really smooth glass.
Yeah, that's a good question. Get more unknowns that will leave me with terrors.
Oh, of course.
Great. So Matt will be wondering, I wonder if aliens have OSHA. Like, what's their health benefits? Like, is there hazmat? Is there hazard pay for
somebody
aliens?
Really ought to install some handrails.
Yeah, they should really should. Yeah, there should be some handrails.
Well,
and,
let's look at Star Wars for a second. Yeah. Millennium Falcon is not safe at all.
No.
Like, there is nothing safe about that ship.
No, seriously.
You have to work in the floor. And then, like, you're flying around, and, oh, there bump. Oh, why did that tool fall on my head? That is not safe. And that then their exit and entry ramp, no handrails, none. You got hydraulics right there.
You know what? You know, not only that, but you know what? I also felt like that both Slave 1 and Slave 2 were unsafe because the way it sits, and then, like, the way it, like, launches up,
right?
And then, like, the pad. And right? I never forget when they, Boba Fett's like, you know, put Captain Solo in the cargo. And they're, like, moving him on up. And I'm like, there's no rails. You've got this piece of carbonite that's just kind of floating haphazardly.
Right.
And they're, like, barely guiding the car. I was like, okay, so not
they're
only.
They're, like, finger guiding it.
Yeah. I was like, so not only is that not safe, because if it falls on anyone's foot, like, it's just broke. It's shattered. Your foot ain't coming back. But. Now you got to put it through the.
I'm totally not distracting us from these Greys that are freaking me out.
Right.
Not
he's at trying. All. Not at all.
So the creepy little Greys whose faces you couldn't see.
The CGI Grey at the end, which I don't know what that was. I don't know if it was pure animation that they put
the
in.
The one that,
or,
did the hand signals back to him.
It was not nearly as scary because it was clearly a little fake.
Yeah.
That was thankfully. Okay. But it was well done. I thought. Sure. I think. Of all of the effects, that and the marionette puppet alien scary spindly guy, those are the two that really stuck out that were not good. Yeah. The rest of everything else seemed to work.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
For $77 and $20 million dollar budget, they grossed $308 billion.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like, it did its thing.
I don't know if any of those numbers are correct, but they sound great, so we're going to go with them.
Johnny has notes.
Oh, it did, because I did my research.
While we were doing our research watching it, Johnny was doing actual research.
Yeah, you know, I do my actual research, you know, like, another historical sidebar about this film. So Spielberg gets solo writing credit, but he actually had, there were several people that worked on it as writers.
Okay.
It came out in 77, November 16th, 3 days before, 2 years and 3 days before my birthday. Shout out to me on the 19th of 79.
Wow.
And Melinda Dillon actually got a Best Actress Oscar nod for her performance in Encounters.
Very nice. So it did some things.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about this in the lobby on the way out. Roy.
Yeah.
The actor.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss was 30 when he was doing this. Yeah. 30, playing a 44-year-old guy.
Another interesting thing about that. So actually, Spielberg wanted Jack Nicholson for the role, but he was unavailable.
Well, thank God.
Yeah, and so during...
What was he working on instead?
I don't remember, but during...
Clockwork...
No.
Shining?
Shining, yeah, maybe? Probably. Somewhere in there. But Dreyfuss on the set of Jaws had heard... Spielberg had talked to him about the project and this, that, and the other, and he literally convinced him to hire him for the role. And so, like, that's how Richard Dreyfuss got... cast, because initially he wanted to go with Jack Nicholson, but Nicholson was unavailable.
Wow.
And so basically he just kind of Dreyfuss was like, oh, and he even,
you
like,
want me for this,
yeah, and not only that, this. Like, yeah. He also suggested certain things and gave Spielberg some ideas about how the movie could flow and so on and so forth, and character development, and really just kind of embraced it, and through just conversations in between takes on Jaws, cool, ended up talking him into giving nice. Him this role.
So if I'm reading this correctly, which I think I am, assuming this produced in like 75, 76 is when they were doing the acting.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at either The Last Tycoon or Going South is what Nicholson was doing. So clearly great
really?
Choices.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, you know what? Nicholson had his wins.
Yeah,
he had his wins.
Yeah. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was a couple years before, and then...
I think that was 74, wasn't it?
75.
Oh, what's 75?
And then I am not seeing. The Shining. I'm not seeing it at all. It may be an 80s movie.
No, I think The Shining's 1980.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
So the movie overall, I think we're all pretty fairly in the realm of it. It was good.
Oh yes, yeah. No, definitely two thumbs up.
Yeah,
It was much better than Cats. So, I'd see it again and again.
How many inexplicable sunburns do you give out of five?
I give it I give it 4.5 sunburns.
4.5.
Wow.
Nice.
Four Jillians and one Roy.
Okay.
Wow.
What about you, Mr. Brown?
I still to this day I give it 5. I give it 5 across the board.
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
Can you give it 10 Roys?
Right. Exactly.
That's terrible. I'm gonna go with. I'm going to go with this a solid 5. Like, this is a good movie. I'm going to watch it again. Probably not right away because I want to sleep.
Yeah, and watch it in daylight.
Sure. Right.
Okay.
Like high noon.
Right.
One last thing. How inept was the military in this? Okay. Roy sneaks past the roadblocks. Roy sneaks out of the helicopter when it's like, there's 12 people on this helicopter. All of a sudden, there's 9 and nobody notices.
Right. The military is both inept and inexplicably, like, unable to do anything. Like, they're not even involved in the military, in the scientist outpost thing. They're no, you didn't see a soldier. Not one.
No.
No.
Which, yeah. So, like, they're worthless. Here's a picture of a flying saucer. Actually, this was made in China, and yeah, I threw it across my yard. And I was like, oh, that's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a couple of influences. What, like, just a couple of things you guys think that this was very directly involved in influencing
what
movie,
what
TV
came from?
Yeah.
No doubt, X-Files.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you guys seen 4400?
Yeah.
So that when they're all walking out of the ship, I was like, that is where 4400 gets that entry. Yeah.
Or there's a movie with Kris Kristofferson and Cheryl Ladd called Millennium.
Okay.
That later was turned into a very doomed television series. So disappointing. Yes. But I digress. But yeah, like that, you know, that 4400, even some things that we kind of don't think about, but in a way were Twin Peaks. Just some of the mysticism and how the story is progressed. The mysticism, some of the ambiguity of characters, how things are foreshadowed that you don't really realize until after the fact and it's finally revealed. Or things being characters. Spielberg, I think, in this movie did a really great job of setting up a character that you don't ever fully see tangible until right at the end. And so that has kind of set the precedence of how, no matter what genre, how a lot of people go about when they set up a character that you don't kind of see. So when I think of stuff like, for example, Heroes, season one, the one season that was legit, right? When they first...
Wait a minute, they had other seasons of that?
They
did. I must have forgotten.
Allegedly. But no, but when...
Sort of like there's only three Indiana Jones movies.
Exactly. Yeah. But when we first, until we see Siler actually fully revealed, it's this character that, like, he's this shadowy guy that's still in these powers. You don't really know right. how he's doing. You don't know anything. And then eventually he's kind of revealed as, like, this bookworm type of guy that, like, again, you wouldn't think to be this sociopathic killer. You know, but just I think this movie definitely set the precedence on how to explore a character and the character not be there all the time, but actually be very much a part of it, and you're very aware of the character.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Batteries Not Included?
Yes. That's another Spielberg.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying I didn't realize it was.
Stand by.
I know.
So
everybody with their technology.
I think that the ships in this, I'm almost positive they're the same ships as in Batteries Not Included. We just get to see them in Batteries Not Included.
Probably so.
Because if you look at those, like, they're...
Hell, were they the same ones in Cocoon? I mean, they probably used to...
Oh, I take that back. Right. No, it was Matthew Robbins directed.
But Spielberg may have produced.
But I want to say it was Amblin Entertainment
or
something.
He probably produced it.
You know, I'm really tired. Good God, I'm really tired of It. Just for the record.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, who?
No, understood. It, the movie. Terrified of Clowns.
Yeah.
It's all over IMDb.
Yeah.
Steven sure Spielberg exactly
produced it.
That makes sense, yeah.
So
yeah.
Then, you know, oh, we're going to reuse these?
Sure.
We spent a lot of money on these.
Yeah, but might as well get some mileage on them.
Right.
I'm
mad at them.
So, I mean, those, obviously that, I think that he has done a lot to influence how we are given sci-fi. I mean, M. Night obviously has a lot that he pulled from here.
Yeah.
I mean, it essentially is the same story, just with a different twist, that the aliens are malevolent. Clearly malevolent, and there's no attempt to converse with them. But The Arrival, have you guys seen The Arrival?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Sheen? Yeah.
No. Or the new one with what's her girl? Amy Adams?
Yes. Yeah.
It just came out.
The one where they
use the language,
okay, yeah.
Because I mean, literally,
no spoilers here.
They start with tones and lights and go on from there. Right. You see the same light patterny thing in Independence Day. That was another one,
right? Wow. They tried doing that.
That's not
and that worked for all of about 10 seconds,
right?
Yeah,
because they were doing the alien equivalent of flipping in the bird.
I mean, as much as I love Independence Day, is problematic as all get out, but
oh, that's another podcast.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's another podcast.
We can argue that all day. Yeah.
It was what it was. But it was
Independence Day is sort of like, you know, your alcoholic aunt. It's like you love her, but she's a real pain in the ass. You know, you're like, I love you, but it'd be really easier if you didn't live in my house.
Oh, my goodness.
wow. So, I mean.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Ed.
Yeah, right.
I don't have an alcoholic aunt. I've just heard stories.
So there are some solid, like, it's clear that this was the start of something, just like Jaws was a couple years before.
Oh, yeah.
This was the start of something. Spielberg does a great thing. I think E.T. sees a lot of the same things. That CGI gray at the end kind of looked like E.T. You widen its eyes.
Sure.
It has that same kind of feel to it. But yeah, that obviously this is huge in pop culture for what it's influencing. Any last thoughts before we go?
Would love to do more of these podcasts talking about all of the things that we said. That's another podcast.
Absolutely.
I think we need to roll out those episodes at some point.
All right. Well, Johnny, Mr. Brown, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No. Like, I'm glad you finally got to see it. I'm glad that you actually got to experience it in theater.
It was the Dolby Theater at Castleton. Yeah. So we got really good sound.
Yeah. Because I feel like Encounters, like a lot of movies from, I would say circa 95 dialing back, video just doesn't necessarily do them justice. In particular,
from your birth to 1995.
Yeah, there we go. Right, like they don't. They don't really. Y'all missed.
I walked
all of
away
that,
from the microphone.
Right.
God.
You know, they really just kind of. There's quite a few films that just aren't really done justice. And
we saw Lawrence of Arabia on the big screen on film at Franklin Artcraft. Had I not seen it on the big screen, it would not have mattered to me.
Yeah, let me tell you another one that's good is the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston.
I've not seen
every Easter.
I've never seen Ten Commandments.
Every Easter, I bust that bad boy. I remember when ABC used to play it every year for Easter, and I would watch it with my folks. Wow. And then they stopped playing it, so I bought it on DVD. And then finally, maybe like 5 years ago, I was in Petersburg, Indiana. And they had a
like
little
you do.
Right. And they had a little film house, and they played the Ten Commandments on the big screen because they was like they were doing a celluloid revival.
Right.
So there was all these films that they had on celluloid that they were playing. And that was one of them. And to see the parting of the Red Sea and Charlton Heston, all his glory and technical, I was like, yes, you get. So, yeah, I'm so glad you got to experience it.
Yeah.
In a theater.
I am a very strong proponent of movies are meant to be. All movies are meant to be seen in a theater. Some movies should be seen in a theater before you can really appreciate it. Obviously, Lawrence of Arabia. Have you seen Lawrence of Arabia?
If I have, I don't recall it.
This is why you should see it in the theater.
Exactly.
I'm kind of disappointed I haven't seen a bunch of other movies, and I'm hoping they come to the Artcraft. Like Sound of Music would be fantastic in the theater.
I actually might enjoy the Sound of Music again if I saw it in theater. And against my wishes, I do happen to know all the songs in it.
Well.
Yeah.
About lonely goat herders.
Little old lady, ole he who.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Hey, Ed likes to sing. We got to do something for him.
Fair enough.
So, all in all, it was a great movie. Definitely suggest checking it out. I'm going to take a quick look if I can get it to open quickly while I vamp for time. But there is a wonderful app called Just Watch that we use to find this kind of stuff. And it's going to, of course, take its time to open. But I can put in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and it's going to pop up and tell me exactly where to find that. So you can find, according to Just Watch, you can find Close Encounters of the Third Kind in a couple of different places. But it's all for rent or for buy. So Amazon, Apple, Google Play, Vudu. Hey, look at that. You know, if you can't make it out to the theater to see this, I highly suggest seeing it on rental, even if it's just on your moderate-sized TV at home. I think it's definitely worth it. I think that'll do us tonight for the Nerds Domain podcast. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you guys real soon.